Welcome to Bee's Table Talk. This is the podcast in which we have great conversations about business and our economy. And I'm Bee Kyle, President and CEO of the St. Paul Area Chamber. Thanks for taking the time to join us today. I enjoy these conversations because they're my chance to have to speak with leaders among us who are doing great things within the community and within their organizations. And this year, we're grateful that Wells Fargo has chosen to sponsor this podcast. And Wells Fargo, too, is an organization with a legacy of extraordinary engagement in this region. And they're investing in their priorities through their work and through their individual leaders. And I'm really grateful that they've chosen to support this enterprise as well. Today's conversation will be very exciting. I have admired this gentleman from afar for a long time. David Schultz is a distinguished professor of political science at Hamline University. He's a professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He's an author. He's a sought-after speaker. You may have seen him speaking on any number of topics, including public policy, ethics, election law. And I look forward to a future conversation on professional responsibility, which is an interest of mine. So please welcome David Schultz, and thank you so much for taking your time with us today.
My pleasure, Bee. Thank you for having me, and thank you to the audience for listening today.
So this is going to be a good conversation today, in part because one of the things I admire about you is your thoughtfulness and your intellectual approach to hard issues, which sometimes can become emotionally charged. And so I appreciate being able to be thoughtful as we enter this conversation today around particularly the sales tax in St. Paul and what that means for us as citizens, businesses, voters. But before we get into that, really, I want to talk about you a little bit and so our listeners get to know you. And as I was doing some research on you, I just read that you have been awarded 4 Fulbright scholarships in your in professional tenure. That's extraordinary.
It is. It's I've done Fulbrights in Armenia, Lithuania, Latvia, and Hungary. And I'll just simply say, I've been very lucky, lucky to win those 4. And most people think of me as somebody who does American politics or law. Eventually, I'm going to talk a little bit more about myself. But over the years, I've acquired almost a second persona. You know, many of us have an alter ego. And mine is spending a lot of time in the last dozen years or so, maybe a little bit longer, teaching in Eastern Europe in what used to be the Soviet Union. I've been in Moscow a half a dozen times. I've taught in Ukraine. I've taught through all that part of the world and have really acquired sort of a comparative perspective in terms of how to think about the world. And I really find that fascinating. And maybe to bring something close to home, just in terms of some stuff here. About 7 years ago, I was teaching in Kharkov, Ukraine. And I still have some former students and friends there. And about a year ago, one of my former students sent me a photograph and he said, "Do you remember the building you taught in?" And I said, "Yes." And he sent me a video clip of the Russians blowing up the building. Oh. And I was like, "Oh my God, I can't believe this." And the reason why I mention this is that for most Americans, what's happening in Ukraine is something way distant.
Yeah.
For me, these are friends. These are people that I know. And one of the things I would love to tell people is that, again, I have friends in Moscow. I have friends in Minsk, Belarus. I have friends in Ukraine. And when people here ask me, they say, "What are the people like over there?" I say, "You know what they worry about over there?" And they say, "What?" And I say, "They worry about raising their kids.
Yeah.
They worry about paying their bills. They worry about, am I going to have enough money for retirement?" And they'll say to me, "God, they sound just like us." And I say, they are. And I mention that because there's some certain basics that all of us, regardless of race, religion, or whatever, it's the core. Mm-hmm. It's the core of stuff about we all want to have what at the end of the day, you know, we want to have friends. We want to have family. We want to raise our children properly, and see them grow up and be successes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the messages that I sort of have picked up from the Fulbrights is really the commonality.
Mm-hmm.
And despite the fact that maybe our government and the Russian government don't like one another, we're people.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to figure out ways of connecting as people.
I will tell you, this is a conversation for you and I another day. When I was in the military, I joined in 1986, went to West Germany, and spent my time there. And during my tenure, the wall came down and I was able to see Berlin. I know, right? Fascinating time to have observed. And I'm an economics geek. And so to see the economics, the macroeconomics of a Western country and Eastern country trying to become one, the expectations and the values that were wildly different. We'll have to have another conversation about that, because it was really, really informed my own thinking about people and how we approach the world. So you all can say, you can tell I'm enthused to talk to David, because this is very exciting stuff. And so I read an opinion piece about you earlier this year, which is one of the reasons you had come up in conversation in our team here. You had an opinion piece in the Pioneer Press in January, and you made a powerful statement that really stuck with me. You said, "Wall Street is littered with the wrecks of businesses and CEOs who strayed from their core missions and forgot that once a reputation is damaged, it is very difficult to recover it." So with the that context in mind, I'd really like to dive into the primary topic of today's conversation, which is the proposed sales tax in St. Paul to fund infrastructure and parks improvements. And so first off, you know, what do you see as to lay the groundwork, what do you see as a city's core mission? How would you define that?
Okay, so as I'm answering that, let me also tell you another part about my background.
Mm-hmm.
That in my previous life, I guess we can call it a previous life, I was a city director of planning, zoning, and code enforcement.
Hmm.
My passion in life is local government. That the department I used to live in, or work, or headed up as an administrator, was not just about planning and zoning and economic development, but it was also the place where people called when they had complaints. You know, when people would call and say the garbage wasn't picked up, or there are potholes in the street and so forth. And the reason why I mention this is that I used to say for so long, and I still believe this, that I could run for mayor or city council anywhere in the United States on the core values of what a city are supposed to be about.
Mm-hmm.
And what cities are about are the quality of life services that are close to home.
Mm-hmm.
And on one level, what happens in Washington doesn't affect us on a day-to-day basis. What cities are supposed to do is what? Their job is to what? Keep the streets safe, keep the streets paved. It's about making sure the sidewalks are well-maintained. It's about making sure that the fires get put out, the bad guys are arrested. It's the core mission of cities to address those quality of life issues.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that in many ways, people shop around, you know, people mm-hmm. making decisions for where they want to live. They look into those issues. They look at the quality of the schools.
Mm-hmm.
We know for businesses, when businesses are looking to locate, they look at those same kinds of issues too. Is there a good marketplace here?
Mm-hmm.
Are there services to support me? So to me, if we're thinking of a city as a business, and I think mm-hmm. there's a good reason draw an analogy here, the core mission of a city is those basic services, and that's what they're supposed to do. The core services of streets, sidewalks, fire, police, public safety types of issues is what they should be doing, and that's where the focus should be. But one of the things I've noticed in the last few years is that a lot of politicians stray from that.
Right.
World peace, or they want to talk about climate change. And yes, those are all important issues. And I think you can, and you need to think about how you do core services and do it in a sustainable way.
Mm-hmm.
I think, but at the end of the day, you have to do those things first. It's the core of what cities do, because nobody else does it. So that's to me the mission. And when cities stray away from their core mission, when they no longer do those core important functions, much in the same way that I wrote that piece for the Pioneer Press,
mm-hmm.
cities no longer are doing their job. And if I think about core of also what leadership is about.
Mm-hmm.
It's about making sure that you help articulate the vision and mission of an organization and enable it and its stakeholders to get to where it's supposed to be.
Well, so you then, as we look but that is as a core mission. How does a proposed sales tax fit into this mission? Because it seems like, you know, I need to raise money to fix the roads and invest in the parks. How does the proposed sales tax in your mind fit into the mission?
It doesn't fit into the mission. And the reason why I say that is that if we look at sort of really a history of St. Paul, at least for the last 30 years, maybe even longer, but I'm going to say, let's say for the last quarter century or so, the city's priorities have been wrong. Mm. You know, that what the city should have been doing all along is saying, we're going to stick to the core mission of what the city's supposed to do. We're going to take the scarce resources we have. And people understand the concept of opportunity cost.
Right.
It's an opportunities cost issue. We've got finite amount of dollars. Where do we put it? And it should have been put into issues such as, again, roads, street maintenance, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But they haven't done that. Mm-hmm. They've delayed maintenance. They have done, in some cases, maintenance that has been not up to engineering standards.
Mm-hmm.
And so they strayed away from it. And thus we see, of course, unfortunately, the quality of the infrastructure in St. Paul deteriorating. And that's part of the issue. But part of the issue also, too, is that it is about priorities. And instead of putting the resources there, it's putting resources in other directions,
mm-hmm.
in terms of, while maybe laudable goals, things such as saying, for example, we're going to make reparations, or we're going to spend money on, let us say, childcare, all important issues,
mm-hmm.
but they stray from what the city's supposed to do. That's part of the argument. But the other part of the argument is the fact that, in one way, St. Paul has been dealt kind of a bad hand. You know, that it's the home to the state capitol, a lot of government buildings, a lot of nonprofits and schools, and they're tax exempt. And mm-hmm. we understand that. But having said the fact they were dealt a bad hand, St. Paul has taken a bad hand and played it badly.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of saying that what we really need to do is to expand the tax base.
Right.
To generate more revenue to come in to do the critical things. It has neither taken any action to expand the tax base seriously, nor has it put what few dollars it has into the core things it's supposed to do. And the piece that John Manila and I did a few months ago basically said that over time, the city has overused TIF.
That's the MnPost piece, right?
MnPost piece, yeah.
Yep,
good. Has overused TIF. And so whenever somebody comes to St. Paul, the city says, we'll give you money. We'll give you money to come here. And so what's happened, it has taken a problem and made it worse by exempting even more property from taxes. It has taken very little action to expand the tax base. Take everything I've said, put it together, and this is why the city's where it is. And so now what we're being asked to do is to raise taxes to bail the city out for a series of bad choices that it has made, when in fact, it's not going to do anything to change priorities. It's not going to force the city to grow the tax base. It's really just sort of saying, we've made bad choices. We want more money. We want to raise taxes more. We want to burden perhaps business or homeowners or consumers more to make up for the mistakes that we've made.
Let me ask you this. This was not a question we had talked about in advance. Is there a city, when you look, you've got such a national presence and exposure, is there a city in the United States that you find has been doing a good job on focusing on the basics, a city that we might want to learn more about and from?
Yeah, I think there are some cities that have done better jobs than others. I mean, certainly no one's 100% ideal, but if I were going to pick some cities, you know, that have put their resources well into infrastructure. I might look at cities such as, for example, I think Dallas has done a fairly good job. I think Denver, Colorado has done a pretty good job. I'll even pick a city that maybe is comparable in size to St. Paul, is Buffalo, New York. You know, Buffalo, New York is a kind of an older, what we call them legacy cities now. We don't call them Rust Belt anymore. Legacy city that used to be primarily manufacturing. And yes, they're struggling because they're kind of a post-manufacturing city, but they put their resources into infrastructure. They do the best they can in terms of addressing the issues of crime and safety. So there are a lot of cities in the country that I think are thinking in terms of, we've got to figure out how to, with the few resources we have, do the things that we need to do first.
So the question that comes up, you know, you're talking about sales tax is going to make us an outlier across the state, right? What we really need to do is grow our business base. Another ordinance that has just confounded growth has been this rent control ordinance that was passed through what I find to be shockingly little discussion, negotiation, participation to develop something that makes sense. And so it's essentially halted market rate, you know, residential development in the city. And historically, we've seen 1.6%, 1.8% annual rent increases pre-rent control. And now with all of the risk and exposure property owners are facing, 3%, I mean, they're going to take as much as they can get to protect themselves from the downside risk. And my position always has been that it's a drive to Class C housing. Those folks who need the best housing are going to be the worst losers in the math and the reality of this ordinance. So what would you agree that some of our tax woes are self-inflicted, and rent control is an example?
Yes, it is. Yeah. There's a lot of self-inflicted wounds here. And if we're going to talk about rent control, you know, there are, and I know there can be a debate there, you know, but one of the argument that I've always made about rent control doesn't bring down rents. Rent control
exactly
does, rent control doesn't build more units.
Right.
And I speak as somebody who also worked as a housing and economic planner for a while too, and to say that simply building units is not going to address the needs of, right, let us say, low-income people. Markets, right, are segmented, but building, right, no units doesn't help anybody. And,
right,
and what we need to be thinking about here is creating a variety of type of units that serve lots of different needs. And that does mean, in part, increasing the supply of housing in the city. And the rent control ordinance in and of itself, again, doesn't bring down rents. It doesn't increase supply. And so even if you believe in rent control, you have to couple that with what? An aggressive policy of trying to get more construction, especially, mm-hmm, of the types of units that you want at this, mm-hmm, point. I'm also going to throw one more thing in. And I am also a significant critic of the policies started in Minneapolis, and St. Paul is sort of doing it, of saying that what we're going to do is eliminate single family zoning, you know, or, mm, you know, zoning.
Mm-hmm.
And St. Paul has become, or rather, Minneapolis has become famous for it. And St. Paul isn't quite saying that, but it's kind of moving in that direction here. And the reason why I meant, and they're saying that in their comp plan. And the reason why I mentioned this is that if we also think about one of the drivers of really social justice, drivers of economics, what's the single most important asset that most people have in their life? It's their home.
Mm-hmm.
Home ownership is still a very important value. And one of the things that St. Paul's also not doing, on top of the fact that it's probably not a well-crafted rent control ordinance, they're not making it easy also for home ownership anymore. You know, they're making that more complicated, you know, through some of their zoning and regulations. And so if you think about the fact that they're making that even more complicated, the what you really want to have is a city that has homes and residences for people through all their different style lifestyles, for all their different lifestyles or cycles of life. And you want to have businesses that are in a diverse mix. A few years ago, I won't mention which one it was, one of the local suburbs brought me in as a consultant. And the problem that they had is that they were a bedroom community, but they only had housing for people of a certain lifestyle, which meant that people would move in, would be, let's say, originally like young couples. They would stay for a while, but when they had children or their family was growing, they would leave the city. And then they also didn't have housing for people who were elderly. And so they lost lots of people. And they also didn't have businesses. So people were saying, well, gosh, I want to walk to a grocery store, or I want to go around the corner for a coffee shop or something like that. Quality of life, the amenities of quality of life, housing, a diversity of restaurants, services. This is what cities are about.
Mm-hmm.
Jane Jacobs, who's probably the best writer ever on urban design, wrote many years ago and said, cities are generators of diversity. They are generators of entertainment, of culture, of food, of lifestyle, of housing, of businesses. Cities that do that are successful. The cities that don't do that are in danger of not succeeding. And one of the fears that I have is that St. Paul is not adopting the types of policies that we need to really cater to the variety of needs. It's not providing the real policies, however well-intended, policies that really generate more housing for lots of different people. It's not really, in many ways, a business-friendly community. And in many ways, if this new sales tax goes through, it's not going to be a consumer-friendly
city. Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it. It's already not business friendly, new development friendly. Now it's not going to be consumer friendly. So let's go down that track for a minute. Go back to sales tax, and help. One of my challenges when we debate hard issues is that I tend to see the other person's perspective, and I'm like, I can see why they're doing this, you know. So I can see why Mayor Carter feels compelled to address this $1 billion problem relative to infrastructure and parks. So let, you know, switch roles for a second. I'll be him for a second and say, David, this is the least bad of very difficult choices. What choice do I have but taxing to address the need? I didn't do this. This is, to your point, a history of bad decisions relative to investments in roads. I inherited this problem. What else can I do? How would you respond to that question?
Okay, I think there's a few things I'd have to do here. One of them is I might go back to the basics here and say, let's first revisit on a citywide level our comprehensive plan and think about in terms of, are there better ways that we could structure our comprehensive plan to encourage business and residential development? That may be a first thing to think about here, because if I can now grow more businesses, if I can get more people to buy houses or to live in the city, I can increase, you know, who are going to be taxpayers or who are going to go to restaurants and consume, you know, products or something, I grow the tax base. So what we need here is a change in the philosophy of the city, a change in its approach to how it thinks about basic issues. That would be first. The second is that I would have to take us back to what our conversation started with here about core mission and values, and say that we need to be thinking about what are the things the city is supposed to be doing, what are the essential things, and say, Spend our resources on that. Spend our resources on those quality of life issues. Because if we do that, it's on infrastructure. It is on helping and strengthening the schools. These are the factors that bring people back into cities as opposed to driving them away.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, mm-hmm. it would be thinking in terms of how do we create a city that places the emphasis upon, and I'm going to use the word sustainable, on sustainable growth in policies. The billion-dollar taxes sounds like it fixes a problem. But even if you look at that $1 billion, it still does very little in terms of how much it's going to fix in terms of roads and infrastructure over time. It's a very small smidgen of it. We don't have a comprehensive plan for the city. We don't have what? A business plan for the city for how it's going to what? Take care of its own infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And that's where I would go. That's where I would take us in terms of saying that this is an opportunity for the mayor and for city council to say, we need to think about what are the essential priorities and about a philosophy in terms of how do we create a sustainable plan for the city? Because what's going to happen in 10 years, we pass the sales tax, we're going to fix some roads, we're going to fix some infrastructure, and that's going to be good. But we're not going to solve the underlying problems, and we're going to be back where we were before. And in the process, I think we're going to have what? The highest sales tax in the state.
Indeed.
And we're going to see some businesses say, I'm not going to settle here. We're going to see some consumers. And remember, St. Paul has become a tourist and consumer economy in many ways. People are going down to XL. They're going to, to our entertainment venues. They might start to say, I don't think I want to purchase here. Mm-hmm. I can go across to Roseville, or I can go across to somewhere else and save a few dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not like talking about traveling across the country. We're a mobile community. People just have to drive a couple of miles and they're going to go elsewhere.
Well, then, that whole idea about we're a mobile economy, there's also this sense of businesses just make noise about, we just make noise and then we adjust and we stay put. And I'm agreeing with you. I'm deeply concerned that businesses are simply going to say enough, mm-hmm. enough. All I got to do is go. I mean, when you look at rent control again, housing is just on the other side of St. Paul border. Our neighbors are loving rent control in terms of how it's impacting their growing housing. So too, there will be a day when businesses say enough. So absent an acknowledgement that we need you with us in this, and we need together to build and grow this economy, because not only am I a business person, but I'm also a community person, because I'm like a both. There's this artificial, as if I'm one or the other, right? I mean, I live here. I want to work here. And it's a concern.
You have to think of it this way. If we want to spend money, or if the city wants to spend money on quality of life matters, it's got to generate the capital in some way to be able to do it. And the capital is going to have to come from what? The consumers, the workers, and from the businesses. Mm-hmm. We have to do something that stimulates and allows those people to generate the resources that pays for the housing, that pays for the roads, that pays for all these things like that. And again, if we don't have those kind of policies, we're not going to be able to be a sustainable model as a city.
Yep. Okay, so advice. In the event that the sales tax ballot initiative does not pass, you've already kind of laid out some ideas there. Yeah. What would the advice be if it does?
If it does pass?
Yeah.
Okay, if it does pass, I first want guarantees that it's going to be spent on what it's supposed to be spent on. That's the first thing. And I would like to see a master plan in terms of they're anticipating this amount of money over X number of years. That assumes, by the way, that people don't take their dollars and go elsewhere, and that $1 billion suddenly becomes less because of
that. Good point.
Yeah. Or inflation doesn't eat that $1 billion away. So that's the first thing to think about. Hmm. The second thing is, I still want to see the city do what? I want to see it present a plan, a master plan, long term, in terms of how it's going to maintain its infrastructure.
Yeah.
Does it have a 20-year plan, a 30-year plan in terms of how it's going to repave the roads or how it's going to fix the sidewalks or replace piping and so forth? I still don't see, even with this $1 billion, I don't see the city saying, this is part of a master plan. This is where it fits in. This is the maintenance schedule. None of that is there. I mean, right now, I don't want to quite say, they're saying, give us money and we'll fix some stuff, but we don't have a larger game plan for what to do. But I think that's accurate.
I'm writing some of these things down because I find, one of the other things that I'm really interested in is if there's a requirement for 25% of that sales tax to go to parks, which means I can't afford the parks I've got, which means maybe I should stop making more parks until I can get my feet under me to support what I've got. So,
yeah. And again, all of us like parks, but remember, parks don't pay taxes.
That's right.
And at some point we have to be thinking in terms of how do we balance parks versus housing versus business development?
Right.
Again, if we think of it as in terms of a business, for the city to do what it's supposed to do, if we think of delivering city services as the product of what the city's supposed to do, it has to figure out what? The capital to produce that product. And that's what we don't have right now with the city of St. Paul, a vision on how to produce that product, on generating the capital to produce that product.
Yeah. Well, we're running out of time here, but before I let you go, I have one more question I'd like to ask my guests. Okay. Overarching professional leadership, character development. From your lens, what are some character traits that define a good leader?
Okay, so this is interesting because I've taught some leadership classes and I've read a lot of the leadership books over time. And one of the conclusions I've come to is most of the books are flawed, and they're flawed in an important way. Because at the end of the day, leadership, you know what? It's not about you. It's not about you at the end of the day. And so much of what I see with leadership is about, people think it's about them. And where I start is in terms of what leadership is about, is leaders, their first task is to stick to the mission, is to help them and the stakeholders identify what is the core mission and values of the organization, and to work with others to give a game plan, to articulate and bring those mission and visions together. So that's first. I think a second aspect of what leadership is about is that identification of stakeholders, understanding who are the people that you serve, who are the people who should have the seats at the table. And then somewhere in here, I also think I've come to decide what may be just about the most important issue, or right up there, the most important trait of a good leader is listening more than anything else. Mm. Is that I see so much of the literature talking about being able to articulate visions and about communication. And in a society right now where very few, where everybody talks, but nobody listens, I think good leaders have to listen to their stakeholders and critically respond to them. And the reason why I put this all together is that over the years, I've done a lot of training for organizations, probably 1,000 organizations, and I can always tell when an organization has a problem. Mm. And when I see somebody in a critical, quote, leadership position say something like, this organization couldn't exist without me, I always turn to them and say, it's time you go do something else. Mm-hmm. Because when people confuse what's in the best interest of an organization or the best interest of the city with their own self-interest, that's the problem. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's putting mission first, stakeholders second, you last. Mm-hmm. It's not about you. It's about the organization.
Boy, I mean, that really applies in so many, as I'm sure the listeners are doing, their mind is blowing a little bit at this point when you think about the different ways that we engage in the world and this idea about it's not about you and how you, in fact, I was just talking to, I was talking to a council member recently about this idea of public service. And I said, you know, it's interesting that you serve because you feel compelled to serve. And so many of us not in public office feel it has more to do with, I'm not smart enough or I'm not able enough. And he had the right answer. No, it's not about that. It's about, I desire to serve, not I'm better than anybody or smarter than anybody. It's just bend your mind a little bit around how to think about what it means to serve and to lead.
Yeah. And again, I'll still come back to it and say, I think serve and lead is not telling people what to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's listening to what they have to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important, because one of the criticisms I think that I would have with a lot of organizations, and I'm going to be honest and say perhaps maybe with St. Paul too, is that we're not hearing a lot of listening.
Mm.
We're not seeing the people in the quote leadership positions going out and listening. It oftentimes strikes me that for many of them, it is about them.
Mm-hmm.
It is about their next office. It is about them saying, this is what I want to do,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to saying, what it is you want me to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There is maybe another way of describing it, is that leaders in their work with the public, yeah, the public is their customer, the public is their boss,
mm-hmm.
but we're also partners.
Mm-hmm.
We're partners working together. And to me, leadership is recognizing those interrelated roles and understanding at the end of the day that you really do have to listen. You do have to think about the mission. You do have to think about your stakeholders. And so to me, maybe it's not a coherent theory of leadership. I've been thinking about this a lot in the last couple of years, but I think I've got some of the elements. I think I've identified some of them. And I think after reading so many leadership books, it finally dawned on me that so many of those books were about what? Saying it's all about you.
Right.
And I'm thinking, nah, that's wrong.
Not really.
That's the wrong approach.
Wow. Well, listeners, you can tell why I'm enthused to get to talk to David. And we've run out of time, but thank you so much for talking with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. What you're doing to shape thinking around policy, around leadership, around community is really, really important. And so, and thank you, listeners, for joining us for Bee's Table Talk, and to Wells Fargo for sponsoring the work that we're doing now. We do have more conversations ahead with amazing folks like David, speaking to business leaders and public servants, all desiring to work hard for the region, for the community. So thanks to everybody, and we will see you in the trenches.